VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump is making another prediction about when Islamic State fighters will lose the last of their territory in Syria. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
I brought this out for you.
As reporters stood near Marine One, the president showed maps of what he said was territory the militants held the night he was elected and then as of this morning. On the first one.
Everything red is ISIS.
And then the second.
There is no red. In fact, there's actually a tiny spot which will be gone by tonight.
He previously said the militants were defeated, but sleeper cells remain. The president says the U.S. will keep 400 troops in Syria indefinitely. Sagar Magani, Washington.
During a briefing with reporters Wednesday, President Trump explained that a trade deal with China doesn't guarantee tariffs being lifted. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman has more.
The work towards reaching a trade deal with China is coming along nicely, according to Trump. But he says even if an agreement is reached, tariffs imposed by Washington are likely to remain until U.S. officials are convinced the Chinese are adhering to the terms of any agreement.
If we're taking in billions and billions of dollars right now in tariff money, and for a period of time that will stay.
The president says the Chinese have had a lot of problems living up to some previous deals. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Turkey is heralding as groundbreaking a joint military operation with Iran against Kurdish rebel groups. Turkish-Iranian relations have markedly improved to the concern of Turkey's Western allies. Coordinated and concurrent military strikes against terror groups were carried out along the borders of the two countries, according to a statement by the Iranian Interior Ministry, released Wednesday and reported by Turkish media. The announcement came 2 days after Iran, through military sources quoted by the Fars news agency, denied any involvement. This is VOA News. The Pentagon's Office of Inspector General has launched an investigation into allegations that Acting Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan violated ethics rules by promoting his former employer, Boeing, while serving in the Trump administration. But aviation analyst Richard Albalafia with the Teal Group says that even though Acting Defense Secretary Shanahan was a Boeing executive, there's no reason to think he's wrongly using his influence to help his former company.
There's inevitably going to be suspicion when you have a high-ranking executive, former executive, in the administration, but there's absolutely nothing about his career or his person that I would think would be called into question in a serious way.
The watch group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington filed an ethics complaint last week, claiming that Shanahan had appeared to promote Boeing and disparage former competitors such as Lockheed Martin in his statements. Crisis teams have started arriving in cyclone-hit Mozambique, and nations are pledging humanitarian aid. We get more from AP correspondent Charles de la Desma.
India says the ships changed course after a request from Mozambique's government and are providing humanitarian assistance that includes the evacuation of people stranded by rising floodwaters. Indian teams are expected also to set up medical camps and provide food and other badly needed supplies. Meanwhile, other nations are pledging aid too. Nearly $5 million is expected from the United Arab Emirates. And the chairman of the African Union Commission says the continental body will provide $350,000 in immediate support to the countries affected by the devastating cyclone. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Officials in Afghanistan have delayed the country's presidential polls for a second time, setting September 28th as the new date for the ballot. They also announced Wednesday that provincial council elections in all 34 Afghan provinces also will be held on the same date. The Independent Election Commission, or IEC, said recent amendments in election laws and the pending resolution of numerous problems and challenges facing the voting system prompted it to push back those polls. An American woman has filed a lawsuit against Harvard University, accusing the prestigious institution of shamelessly profiting from photos of her ancestors who were slaves in the 19th century. Tamara Lanier of Connecticut is suing the Ivy League school for wrongful seizure, possession, and expropriation of images of her great-great-grandfather Renty and his daughter Delia. She wants Harvard to hand the images over to her family and pay an unspecified amount in damages. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bratty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 21st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Amnesty International says U.S. airstrikes in Somalia are killing civilians.
This report includes credible evidence that at least 14 civilians were killed and 8 were injured in just 5 of the more than 100 airstrikes carried out in Somalia.
Abdullahi Hassan is the Somali researcher for Amnesty International. Hundreds of trucks are blocked on Cameroon's border with the Central African Republic. A parliamentary committee opens discussion today on amending Egypt's constitution to extend presidential term and ending a healthcare practice in the DRC that some say is immoral.
Maternity prisons, it's a phenomenon which consists of keeping women and the newborns in maternity until they've paid the full amount of the hospitalization expenses they are asked to pay.
Nana Shodu is the CEO and founder of Bomoyi, an NGO based in France. Meanwhile, the DRC government says it has taken steps to improve healthcare financing. An environmental conference is underway in Liberia's capital, and Italian authorities investigate a charity vessel. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Amnesty International has released a report that says U.S. airstrikes in Somalia have killed at least 14 civilians over the past 2 years. The U.S. military is denying the allegation. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
This 73-page report titled The Hidden U.S. War in Somalia focuses on alleged civilian fatalities resulting from U.S. airstrikes intended to weaken militant group Al-Shabaab. Abdullahi Hassan is Amnesty's international Somali researcher.
This report includes credible evidence that at least 14 civilians were killed and 8 were injured in just 5 of the more than 100 airstrikes carried out in Somalia. These 5 strikes happened in the Lower Shabelle region.
The investigators say they base their findings on eyewitness accounts, satellite images, and photos taken on the ground after the attacks. The London-based human rights group notes that U.S. airstrikes in Somalia have tripled since early 2017, when President Donald Trump gave the military broader powers to attack Al-Shabaab targets in southern Somalia. In a statement Wednesday, the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM, which conducts U.S. military strikes in Somalia in coordination with the Somali government, denied its aerial attacks have caused civilian deaths. Part of the statement reads, AFRICOM goes to extraordinary lengths to reduce the likelihood of civilian casualties, exercising restraint as a matter of policy. Amnesty researchers travel to Somalia to speak to people in some of the areas targeted by airstrikes. Somali elder Mumin Abdirahman says civilians are caught up in attacks and have nowhere to go. We are told the target is Al-Shabaab, but this group is living among the people, and the civilians are also living among them. There is no strategy. This airstrike is being carried out by someone who does not know the land and its people and drops bombs. You can imagine the problem it brings. Amnesty researcher Hassan says the frequent air attacks have affected people's lives.
Civilians are really worried. For example, they live under fear. They told many people we interviewed told us they fled their homes. They live in IDP camps because of fear of airstrikes. The population is also not able to do their own businesses. They are not able to do their farms because these airstrikes are killing normal civilians.
Amnesty International, which say the attacks could amount to war crimes, is calling on the U.S. government to investigate the allegations of civilian deaths. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Hundreds of trucks transporting food and humanitarian assistance to the Central African Republic are blocked at the border with Cameroon as rebels have cut off the road to the capital Bangui to protest the president's new cabinet, which they say is not representative enough. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the town of Garua Bulai.
Among the 230 trucks and more than 500 drivers stranded in Garua Bulai is 54-year-old Kumaki, who was transporting rice, maize and vegetable oil to the troubled CAR. He says most of the drivers have exhausted their $200 to $400 allowances they were given to cover the distance within a maximum of 10 days.
We're almost 10 days here.
You have about 100,000 or 200,000. You are eating, you are paying hotel bills and all this. So now we're short of money.
Alex Nsuemen, president of the CAR Transport Trade Union, says he crossed the border but was asked to return.
Il a été dit que le rebelle centrafricain avait bloqué la route au niveau de Zokombo.
He says when he crossed the Cameroon border, he was told that CAR rebels had blocked the road at Zokombo, some 14 kilometers from the town of Garoua-Boulaye. He says he is still expecting his boss to send additional funds so he can take care of himself and the assistant driver. Garoua-Boulaye residents have complained of the mass movement of panic-stricken CAR residents across the border, expressing concern it may escalate. In a crisis meeting Monday, Lawrence Diem Jam, the highest government official in Garoua-Boulaye, assured the population of their safety and said the military was controlling the border. Elhaj Umaru, Cameroon coordinator of the Land Freight Transportation Bureau, visited the drivers and thanked the government of Cameroon for assuring their safety.
Nous voulons dire merci d'abord au gouvernement de la République du Cameroun.
He says he is very happy with the Cameroon government that has secured the trucks, goods and lives of the stranded drivers, despite the tension their presence is causing in Garoua-Boulaye. He says they have not documented any incidents that would be a threat to anyone's life. The landlocked CAR depends on Cameroon's Douala seaport for about 95% of its supplies. Etienne Bonjo, director of Catholic Church Health Services in the CAR, says patients may begin to suffer soon if the drugs meant for Bangui remain in Cameroon for another week.
Malgré notre courage, nous recevons des
pressions. He says it took courage to meet the rebel groups, though negotiations failed to open the border. He says health and humanitarian needs are increasing daily, and the United Nations should take note. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garoua-Boulaye, Cameroon.
The Constitutional and Legislative Affairs Committee of Egypt's Parliament meets today, Thursday, to start a nationwide dialogue on proposed constitutional amendments. The proposals include achieving 25% women participation in Parliament and extending the presidential term from 4 to 6 years. Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat is president of the Party for Reform and Development. He spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the lack of opposition representation in the discussion.
So far, those politicians or intellectuals or political parties who are rejecting this amendment, we have not yet received any invitation to be part of this discussions which will take place in the legislative committee in the parliament. The plan is that they will have to finish all this hearing session within 2 weeks from now. So, of course, it's not enough, especially if you are selecting those in the opinion of accepting this constitutional amendment. So there is no big room for those opponents of this amendment.
The proposed constitutional amendments includes the creation of a Senate and a woman quota in the parliament, more representation of youth, appropriate representation of workers, farmers, youth and Copts. Would these amendments benefit the Egyptian move toward democracy?
Of course not. This is a kind of, incentive, a kind of attraction to all those segments in the society that they will be represented. But that doesn't mean that their presence in such kind of, whether the lower house or the upper house, will make a difference. We have seen what have been happening in this House of Representatives during the last couple of years, and honestly, they have no authority whatsoever. They cannot speak out. They cannot question the government. They cannot hold anyone accountable. So that's why I was saying that if we have to have a Senate, then they should have constitutional authorities that they could really make some balance so we can see a real chamber which could practice their rights constitutionally.
The most important amendment is extending the presidential term in office from 4 to 6 years and the appointment of one or more deputies to the president. What do you think of that?
I think this is the whole point from this amendment, extending the president term in office. And this is something I personally have been rejecting because we believe that two terms, as it has been indicated, is enough. We would like to see a new generation, a new blood. We would like to practice this peaceful rotation of power. So this amendment, it kills hope that we will see an elected president through free and fair elections, fresh blood.
Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat is the president of the Party for Reform and Development in Egypt. He spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shinawi from Cairo. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 21st. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, mothers who give birth in hospitals end up being detained against their will until they can pay the cost of hospitalization. According to activist Nana Shodu, CEO and founder of Bomoyi, an NGO based in France, the detained mothers and their newborn are often denied health care and sometimes food until their bills can be paid. Shodu says the practice is immoral, and she's appealing to new DRC President Felix Tshisekedi and his wife to end it.
We have a problem in Congo regarding maternity prisons. Maternity prisons, it's a phenomenon which consists of keeping women and the newborns in maternity until they've paid the full amount of the hospitalization expenses they are asked to pay.
So are you saying, say, if a mother goes to the hospital and she has a baby, they will not allow the mother to leave the hospital?
No, the baby. So both of them are locked in the hospital until the full payment of the hospitalization expenses have been made. And this is why Bomoyi consider it as being a scandal, which cannot be named in the 21st century. This is inhuman, and this is just a disgrace, you know, for this woman who are giving life.
What kind of hospitals is this practiced? Are those government hospitals or private hospitals?
They're government hospital.
Have you raised this issue with the past government, President Kabila's government? What type of activism are you involved in to bring this to light?
Actually, we have discovered this phenomenon since 2 years within Bomoyi, but we have discovered that it has been happening since a lot of years, and the government is aware of what's happening, but the government doesn't do anything to erase this problem. And now we have a new president elected, President Félix Tshisekedi. I'm calling on him to solve these problems, not only on health, but also on education, because in Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, public school is not free. So you have to pay to go to school as well as for the maternity. Those women who give lives, they are locked in the hospital. They are locked in the maternity with their babies, and they don't get food because hospital in Africa, especially in Congo, they don't feed the patients, they don't feed the babies. When a woman has just delivered, she needs to eat properly. She needs a special diet for her, you know, to produce milk, to feed her baby. But now she doesn't get anything to eat. It's up to her to ask to friends, to family, to help her to have something to eat with her baby. So this is just unacceptable in the 21st century.
We hope that your organization can make a good presentation with the new government of President Felix Tshisekedi.
We hope to. I'm calling on him because I want to meet him. I'd like to meet the first lady, which is Denise. I'm calling on her as well because it's up to her to improve women's situation regarding health, regarding education. It's up to our first lady to change the situation.
We're very happy to have you here at the Voice of America, particularly on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Nana Shodu is the CEO and founder of Bomoyi, an NGO based in France. She spoke with me here in our Washington studio. A spokesperson for the Democratic Republic of Congo's health ministry says health care has no price, but that it has, it does have a cost because health care providers incur cost when they treat patients. Jessica Ilonga says the DRC government is looking for sustainable ways to finance health care that will benefit both health care
providers and the poor. She was responding to criticism that the DRC is one of a handful of African countries where women who give birth in hospitals end up being detained against their will until they can pay the cost of hospitalization, a practice known as maternity prisons. Ilonga says the DRC Health Ministry has initiated a mechanism to improve the financing of health care.
There are indeed some health facilities that do maintain pregnant women who just give birth when they cannot pay for their bills. But such practice has been condemned by the Ministry of Health on several occasions. So it's not an official policy, it's just a practice from individual healthcare providers.
But what does the ministry think about the practice itself?
Well, what we do think is that, like we say, health has no price, but it does have a cost. And so for the Ministry of Health, our responsibility is to find sustainable ways to finance the health system. Because on the one hand, you do have healthcare providers who incur costs when they treat people, so they need to get paid for their work. But on the other side, you do have the population, especially like low-income women, who have the right to access quality healthcare at an affordable price. And so our priority at the Ministry of Health is to actually improve the financing mechanism within the healthcare system with the objective of achieving universal health coverage.
You talk about improving health policy so that to take care of financing for patients. What is the new policy?
The Ministry of Health has initiated over the past 2 years several initiatives to improve the financing mechanism within the health system. And so in September 2018, we actually adopted a new financing strategy. In December 2018, the Parliament also adopted the new law on the organization of public health that contains specific rules on financing mechanism in order to achieve universal health coverage in the country. The Ministry of Health also has a national program that is applicable in 13 of the 26 provinces of the country, in which health services for women, children, and adolescents are highly subsidized to remove all the financial barriers to quality health care. And even like within that program, we do have contracts with healthcare providers. And in that contract, it is specified that maternity detentions are clearly forbidden.
Jessica Ilonga is a spokesperson for the Democratic Republic of Congo's Health Ministry. She was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. A big environmental conference focusing on marine pollution, climate change, sustainable fishing, and blue economy is underway in Liberia. The Blue Ocean Conference is the first environmental and marine conference in West Africa. Moses Gaziewu reports from Monrovia.
Liberia is hosting a conference with support from Conservation International and the Swedish government through its Agency for International Development. Nathaniel Blama, executive director of the Liberia Environmental Protection Agency, said the conference is an opportunity for Liberia to take action on major issues affecting the ocean.
For me, I see more an opportunity for Liberia because as a result of this conference, we're going to derive recommendations, actions that will overall benefit Africa, but Liberia's starting point, the call for action will start from here.
Liberian beaches are among the most vulnerable beaches, having been impacted by all kinds of waste. Mr. Blama said this did not have to happen.
In Liberia, it's pathetic because what we have is not just plastic pollution. We have all types of waste that ends up on our beaches, including medical waste, radiological waste, chemical waste, and it ends up into the food chain.
The conference also highlights how plastic waste poses a threat to the ocean, which experts says is contributing to the reduction of the ocean fish. According to Dr. Sebastian Turin, Executive Vice President of Conservation International, most of the attractive parts of the ocean are no longer good-looking due to pollution.
Provision of food and nutrition, clean water, jobs and livelihoods, tourism and recreation, the carbon storage, the ability of the oceans to mitigate climate change. So there are a number of benefits that we depend on the oceans for. Unfortunately, those benefits are now under threat because we're putting more and more stress on the ocean.
Dr. Turin said two key ways to start building coastal resilience are one, placing emphasis on the management of fisheries, and two, protecting the mangroves.
And so working with the communities and the governments to figure out how we can not only protect the mangroves that still exist, but also restore by planting new mangroves is one of the concrete solutions that we're proposing.
Meanwhile, the Swedish government says it will continue to support West Africa's Blue Ocean Initiative. Sweden's Global Ocean Ambassador Hedin Egren Hill, what she calls the steadfastness of West Africa in his thinking.
I think West Africa is really ready for action. Looking at the engagement here at the conference, it's really my true hope. And whatever we can do to support and continue to engage and cooperate.
Meanwhile, UFO John Smith and his Evergreen Recycling Institute are adding value to waste plastic in Liberia.
Basically, we collect waste plastic material and then turn it into various products like diesel fuel, gasoline, and a roofing sheet, tina, and so on. So our main concern is to have a clean environment, especially plastic-free environment.
At the close of this conference, it is expected that the message will go wider and there will be more moral and political will in preventing marine pollution, climate change, and promoting sustainable fishing and the blue economy. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
Italian authorities have seized an Italian charity ship and questioned the crew, which might have defied an Interior Ministry order that closes all ports to vessels carrying rescue migrants. Sabina Castelfranco reports.
The Mare Ionio is docked and empty in the port of Lampedusa, confiscated by authorities after its crew was placed under investigation by Sicilian magistrates for allegedly favoring illegal immigration. The 49 migrants who were on board, including 12 minors, disembarked in Lampedusa late Tuesday. They were given food, water and fresh clothing 2 days after their rescue off the Libyan coast. Authorities first questioned the owner and captain of the vessel Tuesday night, and further questioning of the crew was taking place Wednesday to reconstruct the entire rescue operation in Libyan waters and the requests made for the migrants to disembark in a safe port. Owner Beppe Caccia said he had asked to see the formal written request banning the vessel from entering Italian waters, but none was made available. Alessandra Sciurba is the spokesperson for NGO Mediterranea, which runs the vessel. She said there was no order to take the migrants to Libya, not by the Libyans or by the Italians. Italian authorities said the Mare Ionio had not been granted permission to enter the island's port. The captain of the boat said he had decided to push forward, citing security reasons and rough seas. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome, Italy.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. 3 days of national mourning began Wednesday in Mozambique after one of the most destructive storms to strike southern Africa in decades killed hundreds of people. Cyclone Idai, packing sustained winds of up to 170 kilometers per hour, hit Mozambique's port city of Beira last Thursday before sweeping inland to Zimbabwe and Malawi. And that is it for this Thursday, March 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Barnes, I'm James Butt in Washington saying, have a good day.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. This one, I judge. every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.